Israel's right to exist, but it's an abstract acknowledgement.
It's what I call the yes but argument.
Absolutely.
I remember when Dr. Alan Key still had his television show on MSNBC, and one night he had the Palestinian ambassador on there, and we had had all week long, you know, there'd been one attack after another, and it would always be the yes but. Oh yes, we condemn terrorism, but,
right.
You know what I mean? And the but would follow real fast. And finally Keith got sick of this, and he began climbing all over this guy. I can't even remember the gentleman's name. I've lived in the Middle East. Okay, and I turned to Carol. I said, I don't know whether Keith recognizes this or not, but he is insulting this man. I said, this man is going to walk on the show. And 30 seconds later, he got up and walked out because Keith, and I know what Keith was trying to do, but I told him, I said, you know, he's just going about this the wrong way. This is not tolerable in his cultural belief. And sure enough, 30 seconds later, jumped up, walked off the set. Yes, we abstractly recognize their right to exist, but...
One challenge that I like to put forth to people, and I haven't done it as often as I should, is I say, look, if you tell me that you don't have a problem with Israel's existence and you don't have a problem with Jewish sovereignty and Jewish power, then tell me one instance where the Israelis have exercised power, used force, and exercised sovereignty that you agree with. If you were in a debate with people who are proponents of divestment or by the anti-Israel narrative offered by Protestant churches, that's the question to ask them, okay? That is the question to ask them. Because ultimately what it comes down to is that there won't be anything that Israel has done since its creation that they will tolerate. And that's one of the things that I was giving a presentation at Dartmouth College, and I was talking about Palestinian society, and a woman said, look, you need to look at this in the context of the occupation. And I said, okay, fine. Let's talk about the occupation. Would the occupation have taken place if the Arabs hadn't precipitated the 1967 war? And I didn't get an answer. And then I said, okay, well, if the Arabs were willing to negotiate after the 1967 war, do you think the Israelis would still be in the West Bank? And this was after the Gaza withdrawal. And her husband said, well, that's an impossible question to answer. And ultimately what it comes down to is that people can tell me down to the number of acres of land appropriated or annexed or made inaccessible as a result of the security fence. But they can't even tell you about the three nose of Khartoum. They can't tell you about, you know, the basic facts that prompted all of these tragedies. They can't tell you about the Arab role in creating the refugee problem and in prompting the occupation. And ultimately, all of these resolutions passed by these churches are an attempt to force Israel to do what they would expect of no other nation in the world. And that is to disgorge property taken...
Views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome to tonight's 2-hour edition of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz.
That's right. It's going to be a good one.
Well, Roy, my co-host, Roy Avila, is here with me tonight. And our theme for tonight is the positivist religion of Auguste Comte. We've had a continuing series on Auguste Comte. And we've looked at the philosophical origins of sustainable development and the, quote, new, unquote, world order, including global governance, a universal religion. Researcher William Roberts returns to assess French philosopher Auguste Comte's philosophy of positivism. In these 2 hours, William will focus on Comte's catechism of positivism and his religion of humanity, the system of sustainable social worship. But before we get to Will, who's on the line, let's just review summarily the earlier shows dealing with Auguste Comte. Back in April, Will was online with us and discussed the Grand Convergence, how Fabian socialists and other one-worlders bring sustainable development to America. We looked at Cecil Rhodes and other Englishmen and Americans who originated, other Englishmen and Americans who did originate Fabian socialism. We looked at where the Fabian ideas came from. Researcher Will Roberts traced that evolution through Auguste Comte's worldview called positivism. Comte envisioned a world that would evolve into what Huxley described in Brave New World, or what George Orwell described in 1984. Comte originated the science of sociology, which is in every American university these days. He coined the term altruism, which means leading your life for others. And he envisioned a world with a very narrow ruling elite, with high secular priests and a classless mass of society, the expendable worker bees. Sustainable development in action. Later, Will returned and discussed the meaning, purpose, and history of logical positivism. There, we examined how early 20th century social scientists began transforming the purpose of language in order to engineer a new world order of compliant and controlled global citizens. We learned how paid facilitators of sustainable development use vision plans and use language games to subdue thought and push public action into a predetermined outcome. Later in October, we had a special guest, Erica Carl, who's been a long-time student and assessor of Auguste Comte and his philosophies. And Erica demonstrated how positivism accounts for the modern philosophical origins of the environmental movement, the reordering of the family unit, and the centralization of economic and political power, otherwise known as public-private partnerships, for those who are regular listeners to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show. It was a great show for people as young as 12 years old. Now, we've also had Will on the Freedom 21 describing legal positivism, the idea that the law that is written by the prince overrides all other law. It effectively neutralizes the natural law. And in our series, The War on Reason, William gave the final 2 hours of that series as discussed the all-out war on natural law. And we discussed how legal positivism has been allowed to trample natural law and what that means for the future of the human race. We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show as we begin our discussion of the Catechism of Positivism. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, and Roy...
Yes.
I almost made the timeline on that last a little bit, but I didn't quite do it once again.
That's okay.
Will, are you with us?
I certainly am, Michael.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. And for our listeners, since we talked last on the air, Will, you've had a radio show on RBN. Tell us a little bit about that before we get started and just what it was you were doing.
Well, I had the opportunity, opened the door that was opened for me by Chris Gerner on the American Exposé broadcast to stand in the gap, if you will, for a while and get my feet wet in the radio broadcasting business as a talk show host, which for me was a real tall order, because to go from this little cabin out into the cyberspace like that was quite the reach. But I was able to maintain there, and I believe that we had a real good dialogue with lots of listeners. I received many letters. We covered lots and lots of topics, but generally we went through the Agenda 21 documents as best I can. We introduced business, we talked about law, we brought in words and glossaries, talked about Comte and St. Simon. And overall, I was very happy with the time on RBN, and I would look forward to some time in the future perhaps coming back on again as either a host or a co-host on a broadcast.
Well, and your listeners had the great advantage of getting some thoughtful analysis and discussion that they could engage in themselves, of course, being on Open Line Radio, and with the kind of information that, boy, our kids going to college just aren't getting. You know, this is the stuff that's routinely blocked out. You know, they take sociology and social science as gospel, and they in effect become the subjects of what we're going to talk about tonight. You know, the pawns in this drive toward the religion of humanity and the overwhelming power of sociology over all social aspects, all human aspects, really.
Well, I found, Michael, that the opportunity for me to be able to demonstrate on air just a little bit about how I go into a research, starting first with an idea or something that we find in reading a text, then going from there to the dictionary, from there into the encyclopedias, from the encyclopedias into our bookshelves, and then follow the trail. And I had many wonderful letters from various parts of the country. And they saw the idea, and I would hope that that was imparted, and if there were homeschoolers listening, that they will be able to use that in their own studies as they become exemplary citizens, actually the shepherds of the flock, if you will, leading the sheeple.
Well, you know, if you had regular college students, they would have gained much as well. We're going to be right back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Well, Roy, we're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, and for those who are away for commercial break, we're just about ready to get into the substance of tonight's discussion, and that's going to be the expanded look at the positivist religion of Auguste Comte. This man actually wrote a catechism. Is that right, Will?
Well, that's right, Michael, and thank you again for inviting me to join your audience. What we'll discuss tonight briefly, I'll just go through a few bullet points here. You've already introduced who Auguste Comte was. We'll talk about him a little bit. What is positivism? We've done a lot on that. But we're going to look at why Comte believed that the positive religion was needed. And then we'll look at how the positive religion might be constituted and function. And then we'll take a look into where that positive religion will first be implemented. And when will this positive religion replace all the other systems of worship? Our focus will be the role that women play as the positive worship is propagated, and relate that to from the 19th century French philosophy to the unfolding United Nations system, Agenda 21. And as the listeners know, I have a premise that I've been working on trying to solve for now since June of 2004, that there is an all-out war raging between legal positivism and the natural law. And with the rise of statism, the state has arrogated unto itself the natural law, returned as codified, statutory, regulated privileges, taxed, licensed, and revocable. And in this broadcast, as we do an inquiry, if you will, into the positive religion of Auguste Comte, we'll see what he meant or intended when he made statements like, beyond the retrograde theological fictions.
And listen, yeah, that's got to be quite an insulting and incendiary comment for most Americans.
I would say that for anyone that has a Christian background, Auguste Comte will be challenging, and so I would recommend that we put on that helmet of salvation and our breastplates here and get our feet shod well in the gospel of peace, so that we understand that this particular system, which began so long ago now, but actually in very recent history, is coming to pass today, I believe, and that's what we'll try and demonstrate tonight. But this is the catechism of positivism, the summary exposition of the universal religion, the religion of humanity, Republic of the West, he said, order and progress, live for others, with love for principle, order for basis, and progress for end.
And well, that sure sounds sweet and glorious. And for the listeners who didn't listen to the first a general discussion of positivism, which focused on love for principle, order for basis, and progress for end. Look at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz archives. Put in the name Will Roberts or August Compton, and you'll go to the radio archives, and you can catch all of the preceding episodes in this series on August Compton, and you'll be able there to get a more thorough general understanding and discussion definition of the positivist philosophy. But tonight we're going to have more of a focus on the religious dogma built into positivism.
That's exactly correct, Michael. And except we're noted now this evening, I'm going to be working from a specific book, and the listeners that have a pencil handy or that are listening to the broadcast in a replay or on a CD would mind to take a note here. There's a book that you can get. I'm basing this all upon Richard Congreve's 1891 English translation of the Catechism of Positive Religion, and that is Comte's 1852 publication. Now, it's available from Kessinger Publishing, the only place that I've found that has it, Kessinger Publishing, and the ISBN number, I'll just give it out, is ISBN, of course, 0-7661-9040-4. And on the web, you can go to www.kessinger, KESSINGER.net, and look for that publication. It's also available through Barnes and Noble. But proceeding now, I'm going to be working from a transcript, as many of the listeners on RBN and other places have heard my talks. I do have transcripts for most of these talks, and if you would like to receive a copy, that you may do also simply by writing to me at William Roberts, that's William Roberts, at Post Office Box 10, P.O. Box 10, in Rocky Comfort, Missouri, Rocky Comfort, Missouri, and the zip code is 64861, ask for the August Compt transcript, and I'll be glad to send it out to you. It runs 16 pages tonight. Now, at the conclusion of a five-hour summary entering his third course of philosophical lectures on the general history of humanity, key words, listen carefully, folks, on Sunday, 19th of October in 1851, in the Palais Cardinal, Auguste Comte invoked the whole of human existence, life, power, wisdom, unity, eternity, and will, thus empowered, progressively reorganizing the social, political, economic, and moral administration of our social systems, looks like programs, we've talked about that, forever terminating egoistic theological constructs, thereby ushering in the collective, altruistic, positive stage of humanity, the true capital P, Providence, the New World Order. With these words, an all-out war began, the war on reason. Now, yeah. This evening, whenever I talk or use the word humanity, remember it's a capital H, humanity. This is the religion of humanity. Michael?
And when he says forever terminating egoistic theological constructs, he's talking about individualism and monotheism. Gone. Replaced with this idea of capital H, humanity.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Now I'm going to quote, and I'm not going to continue to say I'm quoting and unquoting, quoting and unquoting. Generally, I'm quoting. There are lots of quotes here. Everything's documented. Quote, in the name of the past and of the future. Now, that's the capital P and the capital F. In the name of the past and of the future, Comte stated with certainty, the servants of capital H, humanity, theoricians and practitioners, come forward to claim as their due the general direction of this world, in order to construct at length the true providence, capital P, moral, intellectual, and material, excluding once for all from political supremacy all the different servants of God, Catholic, Protestant, or Deist, as at once belated and the source of trouble, close quote. Now, as good students of history, philosophy, and religion know all too well, that which is omitted, that is not stated, often speaks louder than that which is stated. We must not then note that Comte's omission of both Judaism and Islam, servants ostensibly of the same God, are not mentioned. Also not mentioned above are the ancient belief systems of the Orient. However, all of this and much more will be addressed by Comte, speaking in the voice of the priest, okay, let's and careful, speaking in the voice of the priest as he dialogues with the catechumen, speaking in the voice of the woman, styled in 13 conversations, which comprise the text of the catechism, together with several tables and lists compiled by Comte and added by the translator. So here in the in this catechism, it is styled as a conversation. And he goes into it in great length. We'll talk about it. But the catechism then is a book, and it's a book for the propagation, I was going to say propaganda, it's pretty close, the propagation of this particular new religion. And in order to effect it, he uses this concept of a dialogue between the priest, capital T, capital P, and the woman, capital T, capital W. So, in his preface then to the catechism, Comte continued, "We come forward then, avowedly, to deliver the West from an anarchical democracy and from a retrograde aristocracy, so to constitute, as far as practicable, a true sociocracy," new word, capital S, sociocracy, "one combining wisely in furtherance of the common regeneration all the powers of man, each and every case brought to bear according to its nature. In fact, we sociocrats," new word, capital S, "are no more democrats than aristocrats. In our eyes, the respectable mass of these two opposite parties represents, though on no system, on the one hand solidarity, and on the other continuity, between which positivism establishes on a deep foundation a necessary subordination, the substitute at last for their deplorable antagonism."
Boy, we got to stop there for a minute. That paragraph from Auguste Comte is just loaded with New Age dynamics. It's a clear example, it would appear, that he's talking about taking the dynamics of the day, the left-right dynamic, the aristocracy and the democracy, and synthesizing it into this new what did you call it, sociocracy?
A sociocracy, yes.
Sociocracy. Well, you know, if people don't understand the dynamic of bringing synthesis out of divergent views, we have on our radio page tonight an article that will help you understand that, called Sustainable Trouble, the Attempt to Transform the Vision of America, Assessing an Artificial Dialectic. And that's really what Comte is setting up here, is he not? Is the dynamic of a dialectic that synthesizes to his New World system.
Well, that's exactly right. There is a syncretism to his madness. There is a synthesis here. We have antithesis. We do have identifiable thesis. But one of the really key parts here of this first paragraph is that we come forward then. Who's the we? The we here is the theoretician and the practitioner. And these are the high priests of the religion of humanity. These will be those super social workers that we talked about before, the super social scientists. And as we go further into this, we'll see how these will rise up in the replacement, as a replacement set. You know, he was a mathematician, so he was very well aware of that. But a replacement set for the existing, what he considered retrograde, Catholico metaphysical feudalism, the system of existing religions in the West. So, these preceding quotations might lay this kernel, this meat of the concept spoken today of the third way.
Well, let's hold that thought right there, Will, and we'll be right back at 321 Santa Cruz. We're back while some stations take a break with our special guest, William Roberts, as we discuss the positivist religion of Auguste Comte. And let's just keep going. There's a lot of material to cover tonight, Will.
We do have a full plate. I'm like a lumberjack. I've got an overflowing smorgasbord platter here, but I'm going to do my best, and perhaps I'll have to forego the salad and the dessert, but we'll cover as much as we can. This idea of the third way, then, is neither Democrat nor aristocrat.
It's and Tony I think Blair, isn't it?
Go ahead.
I said it's Tony Blair, isn't it?
It's Tony Blair, and it could very well be George Bush. It's neither Democrat nor aristocrat or Republican, but sociocrat. That is positivist. So the words are interchangeable. But Comte ever felt a profound contempt for that which under our different governments bore the name of the opposition. This is a quote from Comte. that bore the name of the capital O opposition, and a secret affinity for all constructive statesmen, even those who would build with materials evidently worn out, seemed to me, Comte speaking, constantly preferable to the mere destructives in a century in which reconstruction is everywhere the chief want. And here it pays to know what time we're talking about. We're right in the 1850s. He's writing in 1852. So remember that the Civil War is imminent on the plate, that there has been many different revolutions and counter-revolutions, and this idea of reorganization and reconstruction, you know, well, we'll get into it.
We're on that same plateau today.
Yes, we are exactly on that same plateau today, Michael. And the down in New Orleans with Katrina, we can see that we're involved there in a systematic urban renewal and reconstruction project there as well. And the way that it's been styled and reported, from what I've got gathered, this sounds to me like another credit mobilier, the public subscription of debt, and a building of a first sustainable queen of cities, perhaps styled like a Branson or a Hollywood.
All very interesting.
Indeed it is. We live in interesting times. So this continued absence of all organic views then led metaphysical empiricism to try to put forward as a solution for universal adoption a feudal imitation of the parliamentary system peculiar to the English transition. Now we're talking, Comte speaking, we're looking at this time where Napoleon I is in place, and then we had the Rousseau and the Robespierre group in place. We have these people coming on, these people coming off. But Comte is styling the work of Rousseau and the others as a feudal imitation of the parliamentary system peculiar to the English transition. Its official supremacy, he said, during a single generation really had no other result for that generation than to give regularity to a lamentable series of oscillations between anarchy and reaction, where the sole merit of either party lay in saving us from its rival.
Well, that sure sounds like American politics today.
Republicans, Democrats, Democrats, Republicans, always saving us from the rival. At the same time, it's just a feudal imitation, if you will, of the parliamentary system peculiar to the English transition, because we don't have a functioning Congress. We don't have a functioning Senate. We do not have a functioning executive. And I believe that our judiciary is considerably compromised. Comte does not mask his contempt for organized religion. He's not a man to spare his rod. Go ahead.
Well, our audience is going to return in just a second here.
We'll start over.
Welcome back. For those listeners who've been away for commercial break, we're with our guest, August Comte, that is Michael Shaw, discussing August Comte. Our guest is Will Roberts, Roy Avila, and I, Michael Shaw, are
I'm just taking notes here. This is amazing stuff.
Well, while some of the audience was gone, Will gave us information about Comte's the preliminary information necessary to understand how we're proceeding into a period of time that is really ripe for the application or implementation of Comte's concepts of the religion of humanity. And Will, we came back in, you were commenting on how Comte does not mask his contempt for organized religion.
That is exactly right. And his catechism, however, draws unmistakably from Roman Catholic organizational doctrines, even Jesuitism. And we'll see this as we proceed. So we have someone here that is throwing out religion, and then we have someone here that in a syncretistic way is dipping right back into the same barrel and drawing out the best of this organization and the best of this system and building a new religion of his own. And his predecessor, Henry Saint Simon, did that also in his New Christianity. So there's nothing new to what he's doing, but he's trying to solve a problem. I believe he was genuine in his intent, even if he was misguided in the content, but his content definitely has a Catholic overtone to it. And writing in the voice of the woman in Conversation 13, now there are 13 conversations in this catechism, Originally it was 11, but he instructed his disciples to split one of the sections into two. But Comte writes, quote, "I may express the profound dislike which is always aroused in me by Protestantism, which professed to reform Western monotheism by stripping of it of its best institutions. Thus it suppressed the dogma of purgatory, the worship of the Virgin and of the saints, the system of confession, and perverts the mysterious sacrament which supplied to the hearts of the Western nations a sublime condensation of their whole religion. Hence it was my sex," here he's speaking in the voice of the woman, so female, "here my sex, female, which of old had aided so powerfully the rise of Catholicism," that would be the Middle Ages, "remained almost completely passive in a reformation in which, for the rejection of its tenderness, it was offered as sole compensation to interpret books which are unintelligible and dangerous." So Comte is simply saying, in so few words, that his entire view of the reformation of religion that began on October 31st, 1517, with Martin Luther, that and earlier with others, Zwingli and Bullinger. But here he says that the only thing that is good out of it is that the people were offered as their sole compensation to interpret books which are unintelligible and dangerous.
Well, not, you know, the fellow ought to be talking about himself is what strikes me, but proceed.
Well, he certainly has a burr under many people's saddles, but unfortunately, Michael, and this is something that I hope the audience will really understand, is that this is not just a specious little chunk of philosophy here from an obscure 18th, 19th century philosopher. He has gone worldwide with this, and it's all over South America, it's all over the world. We'll find it all throughout America, and as we go this evening, we'll see that it even infects the United Nations system. Comte felt a just repugnance, his words, of Protestantism and the extreme disagreement of the West in regard to the purely negative doctrine, which soon divided cities, nations, and nay, even families, and we must consider this well. As we have shown in previous discussions, that positivist program, now I've spent time and time talking about program, the useless E-M-E, the useless tale, P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E. But here it is in August Comte's Catechism of the Positive Religion. The positivist program, that is, the system of positive philosophy and the system of positive politics, the center, also used in his writings, C-E-N-T-R-E. This is a translation made by an Englishman, Richard Congreve. Why does he retain the French? That is for us to understand and not to know today. The center of Comte's positivist catechism builds upon his, what? His encyclopedic analysis of history, his law of three stages, his visioned reorganization of society, anticipating, capital H, humanity's transition into the final state, the positive stage, his elaboration of which we now consider.
I would just suggest, as we look to contemporary civic dynamics, that the programs of, or plans is typically what they're called in Western United States, the plans that are coming from everywhere that are reorganizing our systems of government and our land use dynamics are an application of these concepts of program that you're talking about coming from the ideology of the philosophy of August Comte. Is that a fair statement, Will?
Program me.
Okay. All right. Let's we talk about plans in other weeks, and we're going to be right back here in a few seconds at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. We're back here at Freedom 21 while some stations are away for the next few minutes and continue our discussion with Mr. William Thomas. Mr. William Roberts. You got me so focused on the subject matter that
that's right where I want you.
Mind is slipping.
That's right where I want you, Michael. And for all I care, you can call me Mickey Mouse. We know each other, and I know that you're right on the target on 99.9% of this stuff, but everybody has something to learn in this August Comte's positivism when we're thinking about whether we go to education, whether we're talking about economics, whether we're talking about political science, whether we're talking about law, whether we're talking about religion, the New World Order, the United Nations system. There's just about nowhere that you cannot find traces of Comte's positivism. And that's why I believe it's important enough to dwell on and to bring out, and I hope, and I'm certainly not trying to drum up any converts. We're not proselytizing the positivist religion. We are alerting you as to its existence and asking to go back and take a look and check me out. See if I'm right. See if this doesn't line up with all the things that you've read in the modern writings about this new world order. So his analysis now, this idea of the law of three stages, while we're out on break, I'll just simply say that Hegel set up a philosophy of history, but Hegel, being a contemporary with Comte, may or may not have been an influence, and we'll see in a few moments who the influences are in Comte's philosophical and educational mind. But his analysis led Comte to postulate that the impotence of the theological and metaphysical doctrines, though popular sympathies are instinctively with them, allow a power to constantly pass to their opponents, who seek elsewhere for principles of reorganization. So in this process, where the two sides, actually there's many more than two, we have the Protestants, we have the Lutherans, we've got the Calvins, we've got the Anglican Church, we've got the Jesuit Army, we've got the Vatican. There's many different facets in all of this, but if there's any one thing that sustainable development needs, if there's any one thing that the socialists can make gray hay with, is tension. Tension has to exist. And so it's this controlled opposition that was created in Western Europe that created, opened the door, if you will, crossed the threshold that allowed all of this to come to pass. And so tonight there will be differing views on from England to France, from France to England, England to the United States. But when we look at all of it and we think of it in terms of that Hegelian dialectic, or if we think of it in terms of a controlled opposition, or
we'll be right back, Will. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. We're here with our guest, Will Roberts, discussing the positivist religion of Auguste Comte. And, Will, why don't you just proceed? If you want to summarize what you've covered here in the last couple of minutes, do that summarily as possible and keep going.
Sure, you bet. What we've talked about while we were out on break, folks, is that we are looking at, in Western Europe here and in England and in the colonies, we're looking at a planned, in my opinion, opposition, planned tension, which is necessary for this transition to happen. We went from a theological stage into a metaphysical stage, and what Comte is visioning is the transition from the metaphysical stage into that last and final stage where it will be called, he visions it as the positive stage, but it's that final stage of man where we just kind of go right on out into eternity with all of the continuations along his thoughts. Of course, I'm sure that he would hope that he was the one that came up with the idea for the end game, but that's debatable. Now, he continues here, yet their retrograde attitude is at bottom but a provisional choice of the least evil as against impending anarchy, also bearing no theological conviction. So here we have, in the 1850s, him writing, talking about the choices between the lesser evils. So, placing the principal center of the great Western Republic firmly in Paris, France, Comte believed that the West alone is charged with the glorious and difficult mission of laying the foundations of human regeneration, which the East has subsequently and peaceably to appropriate as it shall rise.
Well, but this new stage or final stage that he discusses is really envisioned by him, is it not, as a stage with a totally compliant human being who lives truly in the communist concept of doing what the community calls upon you to do and seeking nothing as a result of your individual endeavor as a consequence of that. Isn't that at the core of Comtean philosophy?
It is close, Michael, but it's much deeper than that. It's not easily summed up in a sentence. There's so much involved in it. But also, he's laying down a framework. He's laying out a skeleton, if you will, and those that would come after him, his high priests, will flesh it out. But what he's doing is he's setting up his idea of this frame by which we can move into the transition out of the metaphysical stage and move into this age of certainty that's no longer based on supernaturals and superstitions. We would move into an age of observable reality, if you will, observable phenomena, and no longer caught up in the uncertain dialogues of the various religions bickering with one another. This would be the final religion. This would be the final state. But he doesn't put a timeline on it. We are in it now. We will be in it later. We will be in it forever. And that's the way he styled it, until the end of the planet. So there's no easy solution to this. What he's laid out is a change of a reorganization of society, a reorganization of politics, and a reorganization of religion. Now, Compro, from its commencement, the direction of the revolutionary movement, now he's talking about his own times, was always in the hands of two closely connected classes, originally emanating from and soon rivals of the old powers. And that's absolutely historically true. They are the metaphysicians and the lawyers. And if you remember that both Martin Luther and John Calvin were both theologians and lawyers. Calvin wrote the Institutes and so on. So who constitute these metaphysicians and lawyers? Who constitute the spiritual and the temporal element in this negative regime, most traceable in France in the universities and the parliaments? And from such, I say, comes modern legal positivism. Continuing, at the center of his visioned universal discipline was the supremacy of the heart, and this is going to be so important, fundamental now, over the intellect, the heart over the intellect.
Well, let me just give a little side quip here. Here in Santa Cruz, our libraries have on the front desk a pamphlet that we've talked about before. It includes the United Nations Uniform Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And in this little pamphlet, they recite the entire UN Declaration, leaving out the most critical passage, that is Article 29, Section 3, which essentially takes away all of the grants of freedoms and promises given earlier in the Declaration, and says that whatever from time to time is granted the citizenry, it will be subject to the policies and philosophy of the United Nations. Well, when a local citizen inquired of the library service as to why they would put out basically a fraudulent document that leaves the most objectionable provision of the declaration out of it so that people would be misled, the response from the library system was, "Oh, my dear, you need to read this with your heart."
Well, even what they left out is pure Comtean positivism, so I don't know what to tell you. You've got it right on the nail. And so this idea of the supremacy of the heart over the intellect, requiring a transition away from the constantly declining sway of theologism and war, resulting in his desired emancipation of women from wage slavery and misuse, they're being less and less respected since the close of the Middle Ages by the insanity of the emerging Western modernity. Comte recalled that after inaugurating the worship of woman, the necessary prelude to the religion of humanity, the feudal feeling really brought about in the century of the Crusades the changes which Western monotheism underwent when the virgin tended to take the place of God, close quote. So this concept of heart over intellect and the veneration of the Virgin is going to play a central theme. It's the main plate of Comte's positive religion. And as we continue, we'll see more and more how that comes to place. But remember here, he's talking about the emancipation of women from wage slavery and misuse, and they're being less and less respected. So this sounds very nice, and it is. And in his day, it was truth. But recall that as the time comes forward, circumstances change. And in the days where life was short and grinding and brutal, and you worked at the spinning mill and you slept in a tomb-like or coffin-like box, where women in some of these places in Lanark and in Manchester would actually suffocate in the middle of the night the kids and the children were packed in there. They worked at all hours and all days. The men worked themselves to death. The Industrial Revolution in the beginning was no cakewalk. And so what Comte was seeing revolted him. It turned his stomach. And he was seeing something that needed to change. But we'll see how the manipulators and the world controllers go in, no matter who wrote the philosophy, and they do syncretism as well. They snip it here, they snip it there, they snip it here, and they blend together something else that may not be quite what the founder had in mind.
Well, define syncretism.
Okay, syncretism is an interesting word that one of the callers on the daytime broadcast brought to my attention, which basically is two or more opposing views, typically religious views, two or more opposing views that are blended together into a third view. And one example of that, I have a book, the Oxford Illustrated History of Christianity, and it shows a photograph of a cemetery in South America somewhere, and in there you have intermixed the large Catholic crosses and things like that from the Christian burials, and then you also have the various indigenous people's grave markings strewed about with it at the same time. Another photograph in the panel showed a priest and a entourage coming along with the icons, and then behind them all of the people with their various totems and fetish type gods on sticks and things like that. So that's syncretism, and syncretism is precisely, the caller was so accurate, is precisely what positivism is doing when it takes a little here, something borrowed, something new, something old, you know, whatever, how it goes, something blue, and takes a little here and a little there, and he blends it all together. But realize that this is a plan for a world religion, and therefore it needs to, in some regard, appeal to a very broad audience in order to be successful.
Well,
and
it's a process of consensus, is it not, where you really end up with nobody believing in anything, but everybody going along.
Very much so. As long as there's wine and crackers and some good cheese, well, we'll just sit here and listen to whatever they have to say.
Well, you've got a vision of Santa Cruz sitting there in the Ozarks, don't you?
Well, I can see the way that it works in public. It's a real shame, and I really strongly recommend people to take action locally when it comes to them from global. So from a previous broadcast, we'll recall the words of that French Democrat, M. Cazidier, and he said, your materials are disorder, and with them you must organize order, which again is a restatement of that Illuminist motto, ordo ab chao, order out of chaos. And also, again from the 19th century, to destroy you must replace, thus combining three practical qualities, energy, prudence, and perseverance, which itself implies the gradualism of the British Fabian socialists, symbolized by the tortoise from Aesop's fables, remembering their namesake, the Roman consul Quintus Fabius Maximus Verrucosus, who died about 2000 BC, by the way, whom in 217 BC, during the Second Punic War, became dictator of Rome by popular acclamation, and thereupon put into operation the tactics which won him the name Comptator, or the Delayer. Now, Auguste Comte was no advocate of sudden, violent, revolutionary anarchy, as advocated and employed by the branch of positivism termed communism. There was also a movement in England called Chartism, and they advocated terrorism. And in his theory of the positive stage would be wherein a dictator would also rule with popular support. This final state of society, then, a progressive realization of man's perfection as indispensable as inevitable. So we can see in this concept of in vacuo, in order to destroy something, you must replace it. We cannot simply remove the Congress, we cannot simply remove the Senate or the executive branch unless there's a replacement stock. It's like taking a laboratory flask and putting a stopper in it, a rubber stopper, and hooking it up to one to a vacuum pump and the other to a pipette with a valve. You can suck all of the material out of the flask, But when you open that valve, unless you put something else in it, it'll just refill with the same air you took out of it.
And that's why perhaps we're sitting with these offshore globalist institutions, the United Nations, the World Trade Organization, the World Health Organization, et cetera, to fill that void as the nation state becomes dissolved.
And I think there's another aspect, Michael, and that is that they want us to clamor for it. They want it to be our idea. They want it to be consensus. So we make these conditions in the United States and other nations around the world so dreadful that people say, save me, save me.
And that's the permanent revolution. Something we'll talk more about as the Freedom 21 shows proceed.
That's exactly right. A permanent revolution. And in this, in Comte's mind then, the retrograde nature. Now, retrograde is the opposite of progressive. So when we use the word retrograde, just think of it as the obverse of progressive, and progress is his goal. When we hear about progressives in the political fray in Manhattan in the 40s, you're talking about Comte's positivism coming into the United States. But in Comte's mind, the retrograde nature of the worn-out doctrines the conservatives provisionally employ disqualify them absolutely from directing political action in the midst of an anarchy which had had its origin in the irremediable weakness of the old beliefs. All that to say is that the West can no longer submit its reason to the guidance of opinions which evidently admit of no demonstration, nay, Comte said, which are radically chimerical or chimerical, as are all opinions derived from theology, even if reduced to its fundamental dogma. All now recognize that our practical activity must cease to waste itself on mutual hostilities in order peaceably to develop our drawing out in common the resources of man's planet.
That sounds like the Nature Conservancy.
It not only sounds like the Nature Conservancy, but if you echo Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, where it's land, labor, and capital, if you understand the economic wisdom of the day, where a profit was first created when you mined or farmed or fished and brought things out, he's talking about this high priesthood, this patriciate with their appointed dictator, drawing out in common the resources of man's planet. Where that leaves you and I don't know. But locking up the resources is certainly part of the idea with Coca-Cola and the others when they come in, or R.W. Thames, and they lock up a watershed.
Certainly.
So here he then continues. He says, the breakup of the great feudal fortunes was necessary in France as a step to the advent of a new patriciate under the ephemeral ascendancy of the middle class, to which I might add, the breakup of the middle class in the United States of America as a step to the advent of a new patriciate under the ephemeral ascendancy of the patriciate. We need to understand that this breakup of the feudal fortunes was something that was the taking away of the aristocracy's castles and lands. It was taking away or appropriating all of the lands that belonged to the church. And basically, it was a free-for-all, like perhaps you could call it the base realignments and closures, or you mentioned the Nature Conservancy. It's just breaking up these old existing wealths, the companies that have gone bankrupt now that we see every day in the news and so on. I don't follow the news very much, but you probably have better ideas on that line than I do. But here, this breakup of the great feudal fortunes was necessary for this transition, just as it will be necessary to bring the United States to its knees. The Industrial Revolution, Comte said, was well established at this point in his career. And in this rising industrial progress, he saw, quote, the class of bankers rising to its natural supremacy, which alone can reduce our system to material activity. That is so important.
Well, that's certainly the key in the design behind the New World Order, as much as it pretends to be protecting other species from the harm caused by human beings. It's really a financial drive by financial power centers, and that is a contemplation that Comte took back 160 years ago.
That's exactly right. And St. Simon preceded him, and the St. Simonians were Jewish Parisian bankers, and they got involved in a big clash with the House of Rothschild. So we see that when we began our study way back when, and we came out of the Reformation, that there was a new system emerging, and that was controlled by an entirely different group of people. It was the rise of the Parliament. You know, and the Parliament goes all the way back to Iceland and the Althing, but the Parliament became a new vehicle for command and control, and the bankers were right there along with them. Also were the entrepreneurs, and we'll see that right here. At the same time, now that we have these bankers rising to natural supremacy to reduce our system to material activity, that's absolutely important in positivism, at the same time, war becomes the minister of industry, and haven't we seen that? The colonial disputes furnishing the occasion. The capital extension of machinery gives its classic characteristics to modern industry, but it also fosters the lamentable neglect of the masters, and the masters at the time, if you do a etymological study on that, that's entrepreneurs. So the lamentable neglect of the masters as regards of the social conditions proper for the workmen, who become more and more a mere source of profit instead of being what? Instead of being governed. And so I say right here that taking that paragraph alone, that Karl Marx could have grounded his entire Das Kapital on that paragraph, and did just as well as he did with all of the years he spent over in England studying at other universities.
In fact, Marx did draw a lot of his influence from positivism, did he not?
Well, not just positivism, but also St. Simon's writings, and we'll see a little bit of that in this writing. But revolution and counter-revolution by Frederick Engels, I'm looking at it here in my library right in front of me, the revolution and counter-revolution by Frederick Engels and Karl Marx makes references to Comte and St. Simon in their writings, and so they were fully aware of what positivism was. They falsely style it as utopianism. It's certainly not that. Fourier, Thomas More, and others were far more utopian. Even Robert Owen was far more utopian than either St. Simon or Auguste Comte. So there is a little bit of difference. But there was a need to create this verbal wall between those that would follow Marx, the Marxists, and those that would follow Comte, and those that were already following St. Simon. So Comte then attempting to comprehend this, attempting to comprehend the mind of Auguste Comte without accurately recalling the terrible times of revolution and counter-revolution in which he lived, which was 1798 to 1857, and wrote, would be akin to discussing the free speech movement without discussion of the concurrent anti-segregation, women's rights, and communist international movements, together with and backdropped by the Vietnam War and its worldwide anti-war reaction of the 60s and the 70s. So we need to realize the time period that we're dealing with. Auguste Comte was living in an age of turmoil, just as I was growing up in something similar to that with the Vietnam War and all that was happening as with these other various movements, and just as we're starting now to see happening on the campuses with regards to our war on terror. Comte wrote, "The incomplete destructives, such as Voltaire and Rousseau, who thought that they could overthrow the altar and preserve the throne, or the converse, are fallen without possibility of rising and rising after ruling. Such was the destiny allotted to them, the two generations which prepared and achieved the revolutionary explosion." So whether we're looking at the Glorious Revolution, the revolution in the colonies, whether we're looking at the French Revolution, he's talking about these incomplete destructives, and then it indicates Voltaire and Rousseau, who one group was against the throne, the kings, the monarchs, the others were against the church, the papacy, and Voltaire wrote, I believe, "Man will not be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest." So these are these incomplete destructives that were on the tarmac, if you will, with Auguste Comte during his lifetime. Now, as we proceed, keep firmly in mind this idea of destruction, or better stated, decomposition. When the transition occurs from the theological stage to the metaphysical stage, or when it goes from the metaphysical stage into the positive stage is preceded there by a negative moment. Remember that to build you have to destroy. So it's a negative moment. It's a decomposition of one stage as it transitions to another. Comte's Catechism demonstrates well this concept, as we've talked about, of syncretism. The positive religion, by its union of all previously opposing religions into one new worship of humanity, itself retaining a strong Catholic resemblance, including a goddess, he actually writes, a 30-year-old woman carrying her son in her arms, that was the goddess, capital G, three guardian angels symbolizing the mother, the wife, and the daughter in the new religion of positivism, which strongly recall, of course, the fates, the three fates. A priesthood under the leadership of the high priest of humanity, if that's not the papacy, what would it be? The veneration of the dead, there's the Requiem Masses, etc. There are many concepts and terms to discover and understand if we hope to comprehend the advance of this positivist worldview and the new world religion. And in this broadcast, we're only going to touch on a few. We're only touching the surface here. Then I say, knowledge is cumulative. That is, each succeeding generation receives knowledge from the preceding generation or generations, adding to or modifying the received knowledge with the product of their own intellectual, active, or effective efforts. And this truth, in my opinion, it's true, I wrote it, this truth is fundamental to Comtean thought. His catechism was written 6 years before Darwin and Wallace's joint paper was read in the Linnaean Society on July the 1st of 1858. Comte used the term spontaneous and at least once synergy in his writings, though I have never read any of Comte's writings in French. I've always depended upon an English translation, and this emendation, synergy, may have been supplied by Congreve. But the gradual development of organisms and species to their present state, in the sense developed in Comte's Law of Three Stages, is then a proper application of the term evolution. However, to ascribe Darwin's theory of evolution, or the origin of species, to Comte is without merit, because he died in 1857, fully a year before the paper was read.
And how much influence might Darwin have had been subjected to from Comte?
Well, having read The Origin of Species, I think he was out there on the Beagle and playing around, and he was copying from a lot of people. We need to understand that Comte is not alone. We're going to talk about some of the people that influenced him, but I believe that that Darwin was basically a gold digger, and I think that he basically scooped his partner and got a paper out and published before, and I don't believe that that The Origin of Species is worth the paper it's written on. I certainly don't agree with it. And I think if you're talking about making different kinds of farm animals by crossbreeding, or if you're talking about raising beagles or poodles, it has some bearing.
Yeah,
but as far as the origin...
Our time is for this first hour is about up. We're going to be back for our second hour. If you don't get the second hour in your broadcast, check our archives tomorrow. You'll hear the second hour there. And the rest of the audience, hang on as we wrap up and come right back.
Expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, welcome back to the second hour of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. That, you know, that was better than any college hour I ever sat in.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue with our discussion with Will Roberts on the positivist religion of Auguste Comte, showing what it is, talking about what it is, and making references to how it's really popping up and invading so much of our society today, and the structure for an organized world religion and a world government certainly is shaping up. That's the regular and constant theme of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio shows. And, gee, I think Americans are being inundated with this information from so many sources. Of course, Roy, so many people don't want to pay attention to it yet, but increasingly people are. And at some point, I see a critical mass being developed where people realize, oh my, we're on a slippery slope, and it's moving downhill, and we're going to have to do some hard work to get ourselves back up to where we could be and where we should be.
Well, I think if people are by listening to this, one, you know, your brain fills, because it's just amazing how someone that long ago is affecting every part of our lives today, every day, no matter what part of our lives it is. And I think if, you know, people want to go to our website, because it's a lot to absorb, you know, there's a lot of things that they can get there.
Well, there is. And if for the regular viewers who are not on our email list, check out our website, sign up for that email list, and understand we do have products, both written and audio products, video products as well, that'll help you in the comfort of your own time zone begin to understand some of this dynamic. And then, of course, what's really important is that we have tools available for you to spread the information, maybe not at the level we're discussing here tonight, but how is it that the Democrat and Republican parties working together as partners in this new sustainable order are bringing about a total change in our political and economic and we can see spiritual landscapes across this country, in order to get us all combined and forced into these compliant boxes where our lives really aren't our own, and where when we ask the question, who determines the terms of your life, the answer is, well, the community.
Because there is something you can do.
There is something you can do. There's no doubt about that. So let's get back to our guest. Will, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Michael.
Well, let's pick up. For those who are new to this hour of the show and you want to hear what preceded, because they do relate together, you can catch on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio archives the replay, the archive of the first hour's radio show at those archives. So don't be hesitant to do that. There's a lot of other shows on positivism, as well as the other subjects that are so timely today. So let's continue. You were about to talk about the philosophers that Comte relied upon in his own creations.
Well, we could go there, Michael, but in the interest of time, what I think I'd like to do is first let the listeners know in this hour, as we did in the first, that almost all of the talks that I have given on positivism are available from me in transcript form. In other words, the outline. And just as this evening, where to keep up with the time clock, you know, the commercial breaks and the end of the broadcast wait for no one, I'm going to have to skip over some of this material. So if you'd like to get a copy of tonight's outline, you certainly can from me directly. And let me give that address, if I might, Michael.
Certainly.
My name again is William Roberts. William Roberts, spelled just like it sounds. And my address is Post Office Box 10. That's P.O. Box 10 in Rocky Comfort. Two words, Rocky Comfort, and the zip code there is 64861. It's 64861. And in the first hour, we started in on understanding, or getting to an understanding. I'm on page 7, Michael. But we started in on an understanding of the heart and the intellect, and this contrast that Comte built into the Catechism of the Positive Religion between the heart and the intellect, and how he has based so much of his religion upon that, that if we fail to see it, we'll miss something that's very important. But socialism, basically, or simplistically, is defined as the doctrine that there should be public ownership and operation of the means of production and distribution, and has long been considered to manifest a feminine aspect. And so we had material here where we would look at the heart and the sympathies and the various emotions, attributes of women in Comte's catechism that are really specious. I believe that it's a paradox, because positivism teaches that scientific fact is the only source of truth. And yet, here and elsewhere in the catechism, Comte advances that the feelings, the emotions, the sympathies, and yes, the heart, as principally the domain of the affective sex, the female, the woman. Is not man a man equally possessed of these attributes? Does not a man love his children? Does he not have feelings? Beyond literature, its prose or its poetry, is it scientifically correct to consider feeling as distinct from any of the other functions of the brain? Will this stand the criterion of empirical verifiability, the definitive rule-making, the logical positivist syntactician advances? As we will see, Comte divides man from woman on this specious principle, and as stated, it is the basis of positivist unity, or love for principle. So, the social system, the socialist system, Philip Wiley, in his book, The Generation of Vipers, coined the phrase, and it was written in the 40s, coined the phrase, the mommy state, when writing about the socialist transformation of America. And what Philip Wiley was talking about was the materialism that was being brought into this country, where people were, through advertising and all other means, at a new time in history, a new page was being turned, and we just seemed to want it to have everything. And more and more and more and more and more and more and more, and Coca-Cola and this and that, and a new Chevy and a new this and a boat and here's and a cabin and this and that and this, and mommy. It just became, it was a wonderful book to read. It's probably available in a used book dealer someplace. But Philip Wiley has a good book. It's called The Generation of Vipers. And as we move further into our study of positivism, we must be ever aware of this leavening that leavens the whole loaf. The use of the affective sex to subdue the intellect and weaken its power is as much a part of Comte's theory as it has now become integral within the United Nations programs for action. We must also be mindful of Comte's inclusion of fetishism. Key word, fetishism.
Let's define that word, please, Will.
I will. It is the worship of material items, such as stones or wood, etc., by Negroes in certain regions of Africa. And it continues to today. Into the early phase of positivist worship, he is introducing it into the early phase of positive worship, though Comte asserts that products, assumedly the products of industrial manufacture, would replace simply the materials. But it's too much to go into right now, but just keep that in mind, that this, in the middle of positivist, actually it's the beginning of the positivist worship in the home, we teach our children to worship
toys,
exactly, and more clothes and boxes of toys and bicycles and more materials and more toys and an unending, insatiable appetite and little dolls for boys and little dolls for girls.
Just overflowing closets.
The overflowing closets. Am I the only one that's ever gone into a nephew's closet and seen the overflowing closet? I think not. That's exactly right. So
that's part of the positivist religion, is to get the young mild mind focused on material goods. And that was actually contemplated by Comte as a positive notion.
That's right. It's part of the need. It's part of the need for the system, of the economic system that comes into the positive polity and in the positive philosophy. And all that the Catechism is a restatement. in simplified terms, and we'll get a little more into that, of those prior works that he wrote. This is what you go out and propagandize with. This is what you propagate the religion with. You train people with the positivist catechism.
So jumping forward a little bit, we've got communitarianism based on precepts of positivism, and ironically enough, the communitarian's voice that rolls around town and talks about the environment is one that's really predicated upon the materialism of fetishism.
Well, fetishism is exactly one of the words that he uses. He makes no bones about it. It's part of the worship. And so, as good students, we need to be aware of that and how he rolls it out. And it's for this nascent or this emerging priesthood of positivism and for all its true disciples, by their conduct as men and citizens, to secure on grounds of experience a due appreciation for its excellence, even from those who cannot judge its principles. I'm paraphrasing Comte here. It's a doctrine which shall always develop all the human virtues, personal, domestic, and civic, and will soon be respected by all its honest opponents, whatever may be their ungrounded predilection for an absolute and egoistic synthesis as opposed to a relative and altruistic one. Relative and altruistic. Altruism is a word he coined, and it simply is alter or otherism. You put aside your own selfish self-interest, and you live for others.
Well, you put aside yourself. It always makes me think of what we're told to do when we get into an airplane, which is to first put on your own mask in the case of a problem, and then put on the mask of the child. Because if you don't take care of yourself, there's no way you can be of assistance to another. And yet this turns it on its head. We're to be rid of our ego, and we're to substitute for that full altruism. We have a caller on the line, Roger from Pennsylvania.
Oh, my good friend Roger.
Yeah, thanks. I missed you there in the afternoons, and the archives are still there for the folks. Yeah, just a couple quick comments, and I had a question for you then. I'm thinking, of course, the new ersatz replacement priesthood that would be led by OBE 1 Kenobi. I think so. Yeah. Hey, I'm thinking, it'd be too charitable to say that it's a case of the road to hell being paved with good intentions, because this is basically a bare-knuckled grab for power. Some people can be deceived into thinking they're altruistic thoughts when they're not. I mean, I'm thinking you and myself might barely have enough wisdom to run our own lives, but lacking the vision of the anointed, that we should be able to run the lives of others as these people purport to do, yes?
Well, partly, but unfortunately, because of the way that this system is designed, Roger, the propaganda starts at birth, and the family unit puts the woman at home, and in the first 12 years, she is that child's primary educator. And then the household is visited from time to time by one of the high priests of humanity, and they come in and make sure that the propaganda is coming down. You could think of it as an assessment test might be made at, say, age 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 12.
Well, we certainly have that with the dawning of the mental health screening for toddlers, and the teen screen, which if you're reading at EdWatch or News with Views, is all over the alternative news sources. Teen screening where the high priest of the government school system comes in and asks some very personal questions of your teen, and really a direct application of what you're talking about.
And in the first generation, we're not going to see the real positive results. But think about it in his terminology. This was the final state. So think it out 50 years, 100 years, fifth generation, seventh generation, and see how this could result in basically citizens of the state.
Yeah, and of course even the Roman Catholic Church has given over to the more transcendent priesthood of the psychological trades, so that they can purge those demon homophobias out of the respective candidates for the priesthood. That's an ongoing curve on Nicholas Rez, but I don't really want to go there so much. But my question was kind of, I was hoping you would, or someone would kind of integrate what I think was important was existentialist epistemology and its despair of knowledge, and then that kind of leading directly into pragmatism, which unfortunately is being validated to non-pejorative uses, like pragmatism is supposed to be a positive thing, and then I'll leave it at that, unless you, and God bless.
Thank you. Well, basically, you can go anywhere, and all of these isms that I often say, whenever you come across a word like that ends in ISM, not every time, aphorism is not such, but generally speaking, whenever you come across a word in our research that ends in an ism, you're dealing with a belief system or a faith system, and behind those belief systems there's a founder, and they generally have a document that is their faith statement. So whether we look at existentialism or pragmatism, the thing to be observing, I guess, or the real benefit in getting a good handle on Auguste Comte, is that then you can see how it has morphed into so many other different faces. The Illuminists always say that they will never be known by the same name twice, but they always change their faces but continue the same drive forward. So it's two steps back, one forward, whether it be styled as pragmatism. If you look at John Dewey's writings, the influence of Auguste Comte is unmistakable. You can look even into Leo Strauss, the Straussians, and find Auguste Comte. So no matter where you go, if you're really dealing with a fundamental or foundation stone philosopher, as I believe that Henri Saint-Simon, the founder of socialism, and Auguste Comte, the founder of positivism, the altruist concept, the live for others, the humanitarianism, when the
sociology.
Yes, when the tidal wave hit into the Malaysia, what did Bill and George do? They went over and they were going to go on a humanitarian relief effort. Well, the word every time it comes up, humanitarianism, goes right back to the religion of humanity, and humanitarianism is a system espoused by Auguste Comte. So we need to be aware. Hello. So the abolition then of this parliamentary regime and the institution of a dictatorial republic are the two preliminary conditions of any true regeneration, according to Comte. So it's the abolition of the parliamentary regime, we've seen that, and the institution of a dictatorial republic are the two preliminary conditions of any true regeneration. His positivist system sets forth the character of the dictatorship envisioned for the final state. In that positivist state, what it wants most is to be compatible with full freedom of exposition, freedom of speech, and even of discussion, a freedom absolutely indispensable for spiritual reorganization, which is not to say that it cannot reassure us against all retrograde tyranny. And so when we're looking at this idea and reading philosophy, this is where the time for Evelyn Wood's speed reading is set aside. We have to read word by word by word by word and clause by clause. Because you would think, certainly, full freedom of exposition and a freedom of discussion would be a good thing, wouldn't it? Well, it is a good thing. But it's absolutely essential if you want to reorganize an existing system and an existing political structure, that is absolutely essential to maintain this freedom of exposition so that you can slogan and propagandize your way into power. So as we can see today, though, by these various hate speech legislations coming on us and at us from the United States, corporate control and censorship of the media sources, proposals to enact international legislation to censor and limit the use of the Internet, and other related assaults on the guarantees stipulated in the First Amendment of the Constitution for the United States of America, when regenerating an existing government, positivists clamor for the freedom of exposition and discussion, but after their administrative dictatorship is in power, the silence of the proletariat is as noticeable as their loss of individuality and freedom.
So those who worry about the squeeze on First Amendment rights have, under positivist theory, reason to be concerned. Those who are concerned about the loss of property and Fifth Amendment rights and the loss of privacy, Fourth Amendment rights, they can expect themselves in this rejuvenation, or we call reinvention of government, to be under total and complete assault. And that, of course, is the dynamic that we feel from the federal government, and here in Santa Cruz, particularly with the property right dynamic, we feel the full-fledged attack there as well. So the pattern of contemporary American politics certainly flows directly from what you've been talking about in these 4 or 5 hours of discussion on positivism. We have another call, Will. Ann from New Mexico. Truth or consequences? Let's hear some truth, Ann.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Hi, Will.
Hello, Ann.
It's very, very interesting. And by the way, I agree with Roger. You are really missed in the afternoon slot. Just a bunch of blather now.
Oh, well.
Oh, it's awful. Anyway, my question is, Kant's religion needs a body. And that's humanity, correct?
That is right.
Now, how would he weave in the commerce and the government into this Planet Inc. corporate body?
Well, we can discuss that in a little greater detail as we go further into it, but generally speaking, this is where the supremacy of the banks in their natural position come into play.
Uh-huh.
And throughout the sustainable communities that will be established in the positive stage, each of those communities will have their bank, and then right next to the bank will probably, well, it's not probably, he even states it, there will be the temple. And so there will be a handshake relationship between the banks and the temples, just the way that there's a handshake relationship between the black nobility of Europe and the papacy that we talked about when we got into the Verona Treaty and other material there. But the way that this body basically is going to grow legs and take action is that once the religion is inculcated, then the system morphs, and then the teeth appear.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we progress this evening in the discussion, we'll see more and more how that happens. And if we run out of time, of course, these transcripts are available, and I'll be glad to send them out to anyone that asks for them.
Oh, please mail me one.
I certainly will, Ann.
Thank you.
Mm.
Well, like I say, it's a most interesting discussion, and I'll just listen off here.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so then we're going to start kind of coming to the close as we start running out of time tonight, Michael, but this work then, this positivist catechism, is an episode, and it furnishes a systematic basis for the active propagation. Now, these are basically a paraphrase of actually a quote from him. The active propagation of positivism necessarily forwards his principal construction, for it brings the new religion to its social audience. However solid the logical and scientific basis of the intellectual discipline instituted by positive philosophy, its severe regime is too antipathetic to our present mental state for it ever to prevail without the irresistible support of women and the proletaries. Now that is a quote from August Comte. The urgent need of it can only be soundly appreciated by these two social masses, so the audience here is women and the proletariat, which, alien to all pretension to teaching, in other words, he visions them as being ignorant and unlearned, can alone enforce on their sympathetic or systematic chiefs this encyclopedic condition demanded by their social office.
Well, Will, I saw on, I think it was CNBC World this Sunday morning. They have a UN show, always a UN guest. And it was a woman from Turkey, totally debilitatory about her own country, derogative, rather, about her own country. And talked about the women's programs and that the UN had instituted in every country in the world for really this feeling purpose, the purpose of rising women's feelings toward global governance. From that last bit you talked about, I see a direct application by globalist institutions at working toward that end. Is that something that you observe?
Absolutely correct, Michael. And if you go to the Rio Declaration on Environment and Development, Principle 20, now for some of the listeners that did listen on the daytime broadcast, I encouraged everybody to get a copy of that big orange 8.5 by 11 book, the Agenda 21, Program for Action. And in there, in the Rio Declaration on Principle 20, it says, women have a vital role
in environmental management and development, their full participation is therefore essential to achieve sustainable development.
Well, that's a pretty direct application of directly stated Comtean principle.
Precisely. Agenda 21, a blueprint for action, bullet point 1311, paragraph 1311, it says, undertake environmental education for farmers, in particular for women, to help the rural population better understand the ecological issues regarding the sustainability of mountain ecosystems.
Well, women are being taken advantage of.
Exactly. 1480.
At the expense of the family, of course, but women are being set up. The women in this county who thinkingly, good-heartedly, or good-feelingly undertake to save the creek are playing right into the hands of a global corporate interests, banking interests, by falling for the scam.
Exactly. Section 1481B, train extension agents and involve farmers and women's groups in crop health and alternative non-chemical ways of controlling pests in agriculture. Let's just go over to Lesotho or Togo or someplace like that, and we will be a UN team, and we're going to be bringing sustainable development to their nation. And so we go in into a village, and we find a woman there and others, but we find a woman there that is personable and outgoing and whatnot, and so we kind of take her under our wings. We bring her to New York, give her a $5,000 all-expenses Macy's bargain basement tour, perm, and then put her through UNU for 2 or 3 months so that she's fully trained on all these principles, and then bring her back to her community in a blue pinstripe suit and a briefcase and let her talk to the ladies there. She'll be a god amongst ladies. She'll be the head chieftain in her town. And so what we're looking at here in this use, and it is a misuse in my opinion, in this use of women in this way, we're pandering basically to the proletaries. Let's not make it completely gender. The indigenous people are talked about repeatedly in the United Nations documents. But here in the Millennium Campaign Trade, this is a pamphlet that was sent to me by a listener. It's the role of the Doha Round in achieving the Millennium Development Goals. Principle number 3, promote gender equality and empower women. These are Millennium Development Goals. And so in this process, we're co-opting the women and the men, the indigenous people. And for the first time in their lives, they're getting recognition and their ideas are heard. And they're held up as icons in the communities. And so as a result, they just go right along.
Well, you know, I can look at Chamber of Commerce Awards here in Santa Cruz County. And, you know, women are being given the Woman of the Year Awards for doing just these kinds of things.
Well, I don't know about your community, but I know in this community that the representative for the Chamber of Commerce is a woman, the county clerk's a woman, and we can just go right on up the list. So this process is essential. Remember what Comp said. This is absolutely essential to bring positivism into place. And in a previous discussion, we talked about logical positivism, and this is the same sort of a program. Comp has no compunction whatsoever about consecrating expressions and passing them into universal circulation.
Like sustainable development or interdependence instead of independence.
Yes.
And in the like.
Yes, and governance. You name the subject, we can just go ahead and coin these terms. Now, he says that these are not terms that are created by them, but it's just terms that they adopt. They systematize the meaning, and they foster the use, and they use them as formulas, like static and dynamic, which you can find in business, economics, social statics, social dynamics. They talk about uniform use. And there we could look at the International Uniform Law Commission and our own Uniform Law Commission in the United States.
Well, which we have a good show on, some of the references you've made here recently, the Uniform Law Commission. We had our guest Gary Robinson. You can find it at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Archives. And that's just a wonderful insight about how laws are really made, right along the lines of what we're talking about here. And when you talked earlier about the Millennium Campaign, our show with Joan Peros and Joan Vion on the Millennium Goals set out in the year 2000 and how the UN is approaching those. And once having understood August Comte, you can go back into those discussions and you can see how all these pieces really start to fit together. The dots are not that tough to connect.
That's right, and he is hidden in plain view, because if you ask about, no one knows who he is. But if you read about, you'll find him. Now, in his catechism on page 11, Michael, down near the bottom, just letting the audience know that I am working from a transcript, and it is available. Michael has a copy of it. In his catechism, Comte states, I see none anywhere but women who, as a consequence of their wholesome exclusion from political action, can give me the support required. But the doctrine which alone will secure the regular action of these two safeguards can at the outset find no commanding support but in the feeling of women, soon to be aided by the reason of the proletariat. Without the due intervention of women, the discipline of positivism would not succeed in driving back to the last ranks these pretended thinkers who speak with decision on sociological questions, though ignorant of arithmetic. Till positive religion has sufficiently overcome this resistance of women, it will not be able in its treatment of the leading partisans of the different belated systems to give free scope to its decided and just reprobation of their mental and moral inferiority.
Oh my.
And remember, all of this is to put the banks in their natural position of supremacy, again Comte's words.
This is absolutely correct. Now, we can take a look here and jump ahead another to page 13 as the time clock runs against me here. But he says, over and above its personal relations with the highest patrician class, which can act so powerfully on the rest, it, positivism, will find everywhere allies by virtue of a befitting reorganization of the voluntary protectorate.
Now, for people here and elsewhere in the West where you've got resource conservation districts, their term is always, well, we're looking for voluntary compliance. We'll work with you to help you keep the management of your property if you are voluntarily compliant with our rules.
Exactly. And so then he continues, he says, the institution of chivalry is in no way peculiar to military existence. That is a very pregnant serious words there. It is more adapted under better forms to the positive regime, where the protection, though in the main given in the form of money, that's protection money, will often call forth a devotion less striking but more effectual and moreover better regulated. Many industrial chiefs, especially among the bankers, will from early life enroll themselves as members of the free association, would that be the Chamber of Commerce, which having at its disposal enormous wealth, would that be the World Bank, will either on its own impulse or on an appeal from the priesthood generously interfere in the more important contests, would that be mercenaries?
Well, in the priesthood would be the social scientist.
Absolutely. And so if it meant something specious like a genetically modified seed strain that we could introduce into the food source of Iraq to replace their generations-old seed bank, well, then I guess that would be a way of generously interfering, would it not?
Hmm.
So here we recall that the Simonians, that's the Saint Simonians, that's S-A-I-N-T hyphen S-I-M-O-N, Saint Simon. I always speak phonetically. Comte's name is Comte, but I say Comte so that you can read it and hear it. And Saint Simon is Saint Simon, but you wouldn't know what I said. So it's Saint hyphen Simon. That is, Saint Simon's cadre of prominent Parisian Jewish banking disciples saw the bank as the modern temple of their new female messiah worship cult. Comte, not to be outdone, states, the regular numbers of bankers in the West, and this answers Anne's question, is the same as that of the positivist temples, each of which will be under the temporal protectorate of the adjacent banker. Somehow we have to protect our high priesthood here. Commissioned by the national triumvirate to be the channel of all sacerdotal payments. In each separate republic of Comte's positivist New World Order, the government properly so-called, that is to say, the supreme temporal power, will be vested naturally, in the three leading bankers, respectively taking by choice the operations of commerce, manufactures, and agriculture. So we can see here that he's putting a very high premium on his patriciate made up of the captains of finance and industry, and then through the idea of chivalry, remember that's knights in the shining armor, you call out the knights of altar. You call up the Knights, and they come and protect you.
The Knights of the Round Table.
The Knights of the Round Table, precisely. So, for great duties demand great powers. Our disorders are most aggravated by the jealous ambition of the smaller capitalists.
Well, we talk all the time about how the squeeze of sustainable development is to eliminate the free enterprise, small, legitimate capitalists, as opposed to the, you know, connected, government-connected, would-be oligopoly that squeezes out independent, real-life citizen operators in industry after industry. And here it is. We find it seated right in positive philosophy.
Absolutely. And this, their blind contempt of the people, you see. But when the conduct of this class, notice the wording, when the conduct of this class shall be in a sufficient degree regenerated under the joint stimulus of circumstances and convictions, how many convictions? Its heads will be absorbed into the patriciate and its mass into the proletariat, so doing away with the middle classes properly so-called.
Well, and
close
that,
quote.
And that again relates to the dynamics going on in Santa Cruz and in every county around the country. I mean, here it's very clear. You partner with the government if you're a free enterpriser, or you're out of business. And so when he calls for the absorption into the patriciate of those who have proper convictions, that's exactly what he's talking about, is it not?
Well, it's the elevation of the sustainable mercenaries and the demerit of all opposers.
Okay.
And then, you know, now as we go closer into the sustainable aspect of all of this, he talks about in these new cities. Now, of course, if you go back and study Aristotle, you know that most forms of government work best when the groups are small. We have a huge nation here. Soviet Union is a huge nation. It's hard to manage in such a situation like that. It's so spread out. So then there's a centralized government that comes into power. The centralized government gets more powerful than it ought to ever have been. And then the corruption begins. The system decays. Whenever a social instrument becomes an institution, survival is its number one focus. However, he's looking at smaller groups, sustainable cities. A population of 1 to 3 million, Comp states, at the average rate of 150 per square mile, is really the extent suited to states enjoying true freedom. For we can so designate states only those of which all parts coalesce without any violence from the instinctive sense of a practical community of interest. And here, exactly, is compliance, voluntary compliance, which is not at all voluntary. So well stated, Michael.
Well, and it is the definition of sustainable development. It is the global to local dynamic. The New World Order doesn't leave the local out. In fact, so long as the local obeys itself, then the local is compliant, and the citizens that make up that local must be compliant, or they're not citizens. And when all towns have been made global to local, sustainable development compliant towns, there's no place for anybody who's not part of that compliance. And that's really the attempt to remake human nature and human beings, such that mass intolerance and a total lack of diversity is what becomes the order of the day. That's order for progress, is it not?
That's right. And so you mentioned about losing your, you know, well, I guess not just you that mentioned it. Even John Ashcroft said you will lose your liberties. But when you were talking about the various groups that were concerned about other amendments to the Constitution that might be in danger and peril today, whether it might be through the Patriot Act or some other method, here's what Comte says about that. Positivism never admits anything but duties, of all to all, for its persistently social point of view cannot tolerate the notion of right constantly based on individualism. All human rights, then, are as absurd as they are immoral.
And that's, again, why we can look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which gives with one hand and takes away with the other. It can take it away now, it can take it away later, but the clear point is that under the globalist concept of rights, the rights are simply granted and are fully subject to withdrawal.
That's right. They're taxable, they're licensable, and they're revocable. And that's one of the reasons why when we talked about the natural law, that I didn't use that appendage, the word right. I like to stand right on the natural law and let it speak for itself. But as soon as we start saying right, 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 you Americans, someday soon you'll know what it's like to have no rights any longer. It was a quote I heard on a radio broadcast. But When we start using the term rights, then we dial into their legal system. And that's where we have to just know that we're walking on a minefield and be very conscious of our words when we're out in public speaking, when we go to one of these Soviet Social Council meetings or a visioning meeting or something like that. We want to be very careful of how we state things, because we can put ourselves in a box, become marginalized on that viewpoint, and all of our necessary work and research goes right out the window with our testimony. Now, Comte's veneration of women, in my opinion, almost pornographic in application, belies, however, his true spirit. There can exist no worse industrial chief, Comte wrote, than women. The two fundamental functions of woman, as mother and wife, are, for the family, the equivalent of the spiritual power in the state. They require then the same exemption from active life and the renunciation of all command. Every woman, therefore, must be carefully secured from work away from home, so as to be able to worthily accomplish her holy mission. Remaining willingly within the sanctuary of home, she there freely devotes herself to the moral improvement of her husband and children. This constitution of the family rests from the material point of view on this fundamental rule, systematically formulated by the positivism alone, that man must support woman. And so, as laudable as it may be, understand that he quotes next that the greatest strength, this is from Aristotle, that the greatest strength of woman lies in overcoming the difficulty of obeying. And so, even though on its face originally and inculcated, it brings woman up and elevates her high in rank and status as one half of the system, it will be the high priest, the super social scientist, working with and through the women, that will subject the men. It subjects the intellect to the emotion. And so we need to be very, very conscious of that in this process. Not to demean any of the progress that may have been made over the last 150 years, but certainly to understand that the plan from the inception, whether the suffragettes and the British Fabian socialists were advocating for women's rights, or whether they teamed up with the abolitionists, always it's the same plan. Two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back, and we move constantly towards this new world order. And so there's so much involved in all of that that if we had more time, we could continue to spend another hour on that.
But now, the message, it seems to me, is for the women who are supportive of the globalist order, the local to global to local globalist order, ought to give a further analysis and a deeper thought, because otherwise they might find themselves really holding the bag on this one.
Well, they stand basically to become what we call force multipliers, almost agent provocateur. And not knowing that is a real problem. But for the ladies that are listening this evening, and for those of us who are on the battlefront, if you will, informing and educating others about the bad side, the downside, the ought-not side of globalism and sustainable development, this is a tool in our toolbox. This is a diamond in the tiara. To know this in advance, to going in on it, and know that you're going to be played like a violin, is a heads up, and I hope that that's the way it's being received and that it's not coming across wrong. But when man must support woman, certain things happen. Sympathy is then contrasted with empathy, and there's a vast difference between sympathy and empathy. But sympathy says that you find someone that's hungry and naked on the road, and you bring them into the house, and you feed them, and you clothe them. Empathy says that you help them find food and find clothing. It's different. It's slightly different. If you bring someone into your house like that, you might have a house guest permanently. And that's the welfare state. So female versus male, socialism versus a free market system, the welfare state versus the workforce state. It's the household versus the workshop. It's collective versus individual. It's handouts versus helping hands. It's the emotions versus the intellect. It's consumption versus production, sod versus seed, altruistic versus egoistic. So these are just ways you can contrast his philosophy and see how it can be used to undermine the social, the economic, the political fabric that it took to build this nation on Christian principles, and that this is the system that is being used to destroy that so that we can merge with Islam and the Hindu religions, and all then eventually, a decade, two decades, a century, drop all the other religions and move forward in the positive catechism until infinity, or until we go insane, whichever comes first. And understanding also this concept that women, the affective sex, the subjective, emotion, sympathy, love, these are features that are found throughout all of the catechism of the positive religion. It's the social worship of humanity, sociolatry. It's the veneration of the dead. It's the living, and it's the unborn. So it's the dead, the living, the unborn. It's the past, it's the present, it's the future. And it's love, order, and progress. And it's styled as mother, wife, and daughter. And so in the relationship, in the veneration of the dead, we change our calendar. We honor those that have died. But we actually three times a day have worship sessions where we venerate the dead. And I believe that we should let the dead bury the dead and move on down the road, but that's my own opinion. Then in the living, this is the order. And the order then, as you can see, is dictatorial. It's patriciate. It's from above to below, and so on. And then the future, the unborn. You know, we're doing it all for the children. We're saving our natural resources off against that time in the future when they might be needed, and so on and so forth. The dogma doesn't end. And so we have a real problem coming right at us. And in this constant practice of the private worship, that more than anything else, which will ultimately distinguish true positivists from the false brethren with whom we shall be burdened as soon as the true religion shall prevail, without this mark, an easy hypocrisy would soon usurp the consideration due only to sincere worshippers of humanity between her goddess, her, capital H, between her, this is Comte, a quote, long quote, between her, the goddess, and the family, which is woman, we shall even have to develop the normal intermedium originating in the natural feelings, at present vague and weak, which bind us specially to the country, properly so called. So getting rid of the country is going to be very important because it doesn't have any place in the worship of her, the family, and the development of the socialist, communist kind of a religion. It's not really communism, it's simply straight up positivism. So the impossibility of rightly cultivating these intermediate affections otherwise than in the associations of moderate extent will ever be the best ground on which to rest the reduction of large existing states to simple cities with their due adjuncts as a process I shall have to explain later to you, he says on page 83 of his book. So here what we're looking at is the impossibility of rightly cultivating these immediate affections otherwise than in associations of moderate extent. We cannot have big cities and pull this off. We have got to reduce them. So it will ever be on the best grounds on which to rest the reduction of the large existing states to simple cities. Goodbye, Missouri. Hello, Kansas City. But goodbye, Kansas City. It's going to have to get smaller than that. Limit yourself to looking on each as possessing property, then as receiving wages. This is a quote. Every proletary should own in property all the materials of exclusive and constant use, either for himself or his family. This rule, evidently feasible, can alone ensure order in practical life, but we are far from its satisfactory attainment. Many estimable men are yet without property in their furniture and most common use, and some do not even own the clothes they wear. This is Comte speaking. As for the dwelling, you know that most proletaries are still rather encamped than housed in our anarchical towns. It would be enough, however, to sell by apartments, the condos, the houses that are sold, as we see done in some towns, for each family of the people on payments of a slightly increased rent for some years to own property in lodging. And so the fundamental here, and we're coming closer and closer to the end, but a fundamental here to understand is that fetishism is included in the part of the inculcation of the positive religion. It gets people into the habit from a childhood of material possessions, more materials, more and more, gotta have it, gotta have it, gotta have it now. And so we have to look at it from the standpoint of how does that relate to economic goals? How does that relate in the industrial community? How does that relate to our captains of finance and industry? How are we serving the captains of finance and industry when we are agitated beyond sensible understanding to be driven to acquire the acquisitiveness? Well, simply, production is not the problem. Production has not been the problem for a long time. Distribution is not the problem. Distribution has been solved for a long time. But demand is the problem. So industrial society depends on materialism or fetishism. It depends on the demand from the people for its profit. And so sustainable development requires sustainable demand for a sustainable profit. Positivism is being more as opposed to having more. Live for others. Relatively sustainable in a positive regime. Humanitarianism assumes the perfectibility of man. God apart from nature, becoming nature as God. The laws of nature and nature's God? Why, of course, humanity is nature's God. And so everything is driven by humanity. All worship is a worship of humanity. And if you go and look in his writings, you'll see that the calendar is completely reorganized. Every day of the year remembers someone. Months that might be named Charlemagne and Homer and Moses and Archimedes and Bichat and Descartes, etc. And then every day of the year has given a name. But just like the positive worship in the home, the positive calendar starts with the antiquity. We're going through the law of three stages. It starts with fetishism, and then it moves into polytheism, and then it goes into monotheism, and then it comes finally into the positive stage, the positive worship. Comte has many charts and diagrams in this Catechism of the Positive Religion where he ascribes to various parts of the brain all of these affective abilities, which I would like to challenge him on that by bringing in some modern medical books. But for the day when Bichat was the hot stuff on physiology and anatomy, you know, it may have been relatively accurate or at least reasonable. But there's much more to positivism than we have even touched. He also has a 150-volume catechism, that's the positivist library for the 19th century. There's 150 volumes. It's split up between poetry, science, history, and what he calls synthesis, in other words, bringing together all of the various syncretic methods of thought and ideologies and politics, etc. But it is at home in the first 12 years where the young person will be taught music, and poetry, and reading, and things along that line. And they will be inculcated into probably nice place in their minds. And then after that, then they'll go, if they are qualified candidates, if they have the aptitude, they'll go on in their education, boys and girls alike. But of course, the girls will not quite get as much education as the men because they won't need it. And then, if you actually are exceptional in your studies and are not just simply found in a position where you might be able to serve better as an industrial worker, then you can become a catechumenate or considered for ordination as one of the high priests of humanity, for which you'll need to continue your encyclopedic studies until the age of 42. And at that point, then you live on. But we think of many things in the positivist religion. One of them is the eternal widowhood of women. That's a phrase right out of the book. You can study it. And remember, you can get a copy of the book from Barnes & Noble's. It's the Catechism of the Positive Religion by Richard Congreve. If you call there and ask, you can also go to Kessinger, K-E-S-S-I-N-G-E-R. It's www.kessinger.net. They carry the book and get a copy of it. You can also get copies of the transcripts from me directly. My name again is William Roberts, Post Office Box 10, P.O. Box 10 in Rocky Comfort, Missouri. And the zip code is 64861. And Michael, we have how many different hours of material in the comp series?
Well, we've got five, I believe. Five plus one, Erica Carl. So we've got 6 hours on August comped.
And so they are all consecutive, basically. They're a sequence. And Michael has graciously given me the opportunity to present it in this fashion. But you'll see that in this process going through and gaining an understanding of comped, if we went back and looked at some of the people that he considered to be his mentors in philosophy and in science, we would find basically a rogues gallery of names. And there are several that are really important, but I'll just run through them now that we have a couple minutes, if I may, Michael.
We have one caller, if you want to take
Let's do that instead. It's more important than the list.
All right, Ted from Georgia. Ted, we don't have too much time, but have you got a question for Will?
I have an observation. I believe Dr. Stan, I think one of his mottos is to pursue reality and scorn illusion. Is that not correct, Dr. Stan?
Well, Dr. Stan's not here, but yeah, he opens his show with...
Right, and I think that Comte...
It's going to be illusion, not delusion.
Illusion.
To determine the future.
Yeah, right. Illusion. I think that what Comte probably had in mind in his appeal to women, I think women, generally speaking, are more prone to emotional thought and more susceptible to illusion than men. And I think that women in this way carry a great deal more influence on human affairs than do men. I think that Comte recognized this, and I think most of the great groups today that are active in politics recognize this. And I don't think you can win without recognizing and using illusion, that is to say, appealing to the emotions of the people. And that's my observation. The other observation I might have is that these...
We just got a few seconds, Ted, so...
What Comte is saying is directed towards the elite themselves rather than the masses.
You've got it 100%, Ted, and A+.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you, Will, and we're going to continue these discussions as time passes, and I want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in tonight. If you missed any portion of this, you can go to our archives, and long live freedom, and let's just hope that our children going to universities these days can someday soon learn the positivist philosophy so they know what we're dealing with in our society, because we go to schools, we don't learn these things, and we're roaming in the dark. And so, Will, thank you again so very much for this very insightful discussion tonight.
Thank you, Roy, and thank you, Michael.
Thank you much. Have a good evening. And good night till next week. Henry Lamb will be our special guest. ¶¶